Today I shall start with how we came to the castle. When they let Father out of jail, he decided to buy a house in the country. Father chose Suffolk as a suitable county, so we stayed at the King's Crypt Hotel and drove out house hunting every day. We had a car then. Father and Mother at the front, Rose, Thomas and I at the back. It was late autumn, very gentle and golden. On one drive we saw a high, round tower in the distance, on a little hill. Father instantly decided that we must explore it, though Mother wasn't enthusiastic. It was difficult to find because the little roads twisted and woods and villages kept hiding it from us, but every few minutes we caught a glimpse of it, and Father and Rose and I got very excited. At last we came to a neglected signpost with "To Belmont and the Castle Only" on it, pointing down a narrow, overgrown lane. Father turned in at once, and we crawled along with the brambles clawing at the car as if trying to hold it back. Then suddenly we drove out into the open, and there it was. But not the lonely tower on the hill we'd been searching for. What we saw was quite a large castle, built on level ground. Father gave a shout, and the next minute we were out of the car and staring in amazement. How strange and beautiful it looked in the late afternoon light. I can still recapture that first glimpse, see the sheer grey stone walls and towers against the pale yellow sky, the reflected castle stretching towards us on the brimming moat, the floating patches of emerald green waterweed. Father pointed out the gatehouse. It had two round towers joined halfway up by a room with stone-mullioned windows. To the right of the gatehouse, nothing remained but crumbling ruins, but on the left, a stretch of high, battlemented walls joined it to a round corner tower. A bridge crossed the moat to the great nail-studded oak doors under the windows of the gatehouse room, and a little door cut in one of the big doors stood slightly ajar. The minute Father noticed this, he was off towards it. Mother said vague things about trespassing and tried to stop us following him, but in the end she let us go, while she stayed behind with Thomas, who woke and wept a little. Oh, how well I remember the moment of excitement before we stepped in at the little door. Once through, we were in the cool dimness of the gatehouse passage. That was where I first felt the castle. The queer, heavy coldness was so spell-like that I clutched Rose hard. Together we ran through to the daylight, then stopped dead. On our left, instead of the grey walls and towers we had been expecting, was a long house of whitewashed plaster and herring-boned brick, veined by weather-bleached wood. It had all sorts of odd little lattice windows, bright gold from the sunset. Then I saw Father trying to get in at the kitchen door. He came running back through the overgrown courtyard garden, calling that there was a small window open near the front door that he could put Rose through to let us in. Rose was never frightened of anything. She was trying to scramble up to the window even before Father got there to lift her. Through she went, and we heard her struggling with heavy bolts. Then she flung the door open triumphantly. The square hall was dark and cold, and had a horrid mouldy smell. Every bit of woodwork was a drab ginger colour, painted to imitate the graining of wood. "Would you believe that anyone could do that to fine old panelling?" exploded Father. We went back to the hall, and then into the large room, which is now our drawing room. It stretches the whole depth of the house. Rose and I ran across and knelt on the wide window seat, and Father opened the heavy mullioned windows so that we could look down and see ourselves in the moat. While Rose and I were waving to our reflections, Father went off through the short passage to the kitchen. We suddenly heard him shouting, "The swine! The swine!" Just for an instant, I thought he had found pigs, but it turned out to be his continued opinion of the people who had spoilt the house. The bedrooms were as spoilt as the downstairs rooms. false ceilings, horrid fireplaces, awful wallpapers. But I was very much fetched when I saw the round tower opening into the room which is now Rose's and mine. We found a way out onto the top of the walls. There was quite a wide walk with a battlemented parapet on each side. From there, we could see Mother in the car, nursing Thomas.
"Don't attract her attention," said Father, "or she'll think we're going to break our necks."
The walls led us to one of the gatehouse towers, and inside it, opening onto the staircase, was the door to the gatehouse room.
"Thank the Lord this isn't spoilt," said Father as we went in. "How I could work in this room!"
There were stone-mullioned windows looking into the courtyard, as well as the ones at the front overlooking the lane. We stood looking down on the lane and over the field stretching far on either side. We were so high that we could see how the hedges cut them up into a patchwork pattern. And then we all shouted, "There it is!" at the same moment. Beyond the ruined walls on the west side of the courtyard was a small hill, and on the top of it was the high tower we had driven so long in search of.